It's 8:07. Good morning. I've got 19 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us, Erica Martin with the ABC Forecast Center. Good morning. Or is it Nikki?
You've got Nikki.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead,
yeah,
Nikki.
So with the avalanche update, we do have cold temperatures. Things have dropped significantly since yesterday. Mountain temperatures are currently in the mid-teens, like you said, at trailheads and single digits at ridgeline. Winds are westerly, averaging 5 to 10 miles per hour, and we've got gusts up to 20 miles per hour at most elevations and gusts up to 50 miles per hour at the upper elevations. Last night into early morning, we got about 2 to 5 inches of low-density snow across the range. The main thing we're going to be looking for today is wind-drifted snow. The last few days, we've had strong winds. We also got those few inches of snow last night. That'll form that new snow and into fresh slabs of wind-drifted snow today. These will be small and stubborn since they don't have a ton of snow to work with. But with the elevated winds, any snow that could be moved around will be moved around. So look for any slopes with signs of wind-drifted snow, such as wavy, rounded, or pillow-shaped snow. This will be at primarily upper elevations, and avoid those slopes. Today, most terrain is going to have a low avalanche danger. However, moderate danger will exist at all upper elevations for triggering fresh slabs of wind-drifted snow. Pay attention to changing springtime conditions and evaluate terrain carefully.
Okay. Hey, so Nikki, what's the rest of your schedule like this spring?
So we're going to continue issuing forecasts until at least April 12th and then reevaluate from there. And if the weather deems it necessary, we'll continue issuing a forecast for like another week or two after that. And then for the end of April, I guess, maybe intermittent forecasts as it snows.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll expect to hear from you another week then. Thank you.
Yep. Have a good one.
KPCW News Time now, 8:09.
This KPCW weather report is brought to you in part by Deer Valley Resort, deervalley.com.
And again, we've got a chance of some showers today with some sunshine maybe later this afternoon. Expected high, though, cold. 31 is the high. Clear tonight, 15 is the overnight low. Sunny and 40 again tomorrow. Mostly sunny and 48 for Saturday, again with some more unsettled weather moving in Saturday night through next Tuesday. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with Wasatch County Manager Mike Davis. We'll be talking to him about the stay-at-home order that took effect yesterday. Then Summit County Councilmember Kim Carson with a recap of yesterday's council meeting. Finally, I'll be talking with Heber City LDS Stake President Travis Wilcock, talking about how the church continues to minister during this shutdown of churches. Stay tuned. Taking a look at local news now, Vail Resorts furloughing nearly all of their year-round hourly employees, and salaried employees are getting at least a 5% pay cut. KPCW's Carolyn Murray tells us how many Park City Mountain employees are affected.
Park City Mountain Director of Communications Margo Van Ness tells KPCW 391 employees will be furloughed for at least the next 1 to 2 months, starting this Saturday, the result of cost-saving measures. Vail CEO Rob Katz announced the company-wide furloughs Wednesday. In a written statement, Katz said the COVID-19 crisis has hit the travel industry particularly hard. All of Vail Ski Mountain's lodging, retail, and transportation businesses are shut down, and Katz said it's becoming less clear when they will reopen. Park City Mountain is owned by Vail and closed March 15th, 4 weeks before it was scheduled to close. Katz says the early closure of Vail's North American operations will cost the company at least $180 to $200 million. In addition to the furloughs and the pay cuts, Vail is suspending the company's 401k match for the next 6 months and eliminating the cash compensation for members of the board of directors for 6 months. Katz said he will also give up his salary during that time. The furloughed employees will still have full health care coverage, with Vail paying all premiums. Van Ness said after the furloughs, 217 people will still be working at Park City Mountain. Salaried employees' pay cuts start at 5% and go to a 25% reduction for most senior executives. Katz also said it's possible COVID-19 challenges may force Vail to materially delay or cancel the upcoming summer season. And if that happens, more measures might be needed. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
And Utah Governor Gary Herbert announcing yesterday a moratorium on evictions for the next month to help residential tenants who can't pay their rent due to the impacts of COVID-19. KPCW's Emily Means reports.
It's the first of the month. For nearly one in three Utah households, rent is due. The Utah Department of Workforce Services reported nearly 20,000 new claims for unemployment benefits from March 15th to March 21st. The industry that saw the highest number of claims was food preparation and serving, with 37% of the claims. At Wednesday's COVID-19 update, Utah Governor Gary Herbert declared, by executive order, the ability for tenants to defer rent and a hold on landlords serving tenants with evictions until May 15th.
We've talked to the courts about this, the Apartment Association, and many others. We think this is an appropriate, practical notice to be given at this time to help give some certainty and eliminate some confusion and apprehension and fear that's out there in the marketplace today.
June Hyatt is with Utah Renters Together, a grassroots tenants union working to change Utah eviction policy. On Tuesday, before Herbert announced the eviction freeze, Hyatt said Utahns could have had eviction notices posted on their doors as early as Friday.
So a very real reality for Utah renters right now is housing insecurity could be around the corner, and there's not a lot of options for renters in Utah.
Herbert mentioned forthcoming aid from the $2 trillion Federal CARES Act, which includes a one-time payment of $1,200 for adults earning less than $75,000 and $500 per child. The package also includes a 120-day eviction moratorium for properties under federal housing programs. Hyatt says Utah Renters Together is grateful for the order, but the devil's in the details. There's also the issue of what happens come May 15th.
I think that the governor's plan is intended to allow time for federal stimulus payments to come through and unemployment applications to be processed. But there is always the problem of being 2 months behind rent and trying to catch up. And so, again, I think this is where the details will hopefully get into what happens on May 15th if economic circumstances are the same or worsened by then.
The Utah Apartment Association is an advocacy organization for rental housing professionals. Prior to Herbert's executive order, the UAA suggested renters and landlords work out a rent deferment plan together. The association didn't recommend a one-size-fits-all policy for landlords across the state, though, recommending each individual landlord create their own policy, requirements, and payment plans. Some suggested requirements included tenants proving their income loss is related to the pandemic and whether the renter is considered a good tenant. UAA Executive Director Paul Smith told KPCW the governor jumped the gun on the announcement. Smith says housing stakeholders helped draft the order, and the state agreed to release $5 million in rental assistance to tenants. The tenants would apply for assistance, and landlords would receive checks. Herbert later clarified on Twitter that the eviction moratorium and rent deferment only applies to tenants whose financial stability has been negatively impacted by the COVID-19 outbreak, and that renters will still need to pay what they owe to landlords when the order expires. Emily Means, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:15. 8:15, good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, and we've got some construction happening right on the other side of this wall, so bear with us. Anyway, Wasatch County's stay-at-home order went into effect yesterday, requiring all non-essential businesses to cease operations. The order also provides stronger language and directive on social distancing. Joining me now on the phone, I have Wasatch County Manager Mike Davis. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Leslie.
So why did the council feel this was necessary?
Well, there are a lot of reasons, but the main reason would be that our rate of infected individuals is in the top 50 in the United States for our population. And in the state, we're only second to Summit County. And so it was felt, we've worked very closely with Summit County, and it was felt that the two of us together implementing similar type health orders could better prevent the spread of this virus, or at least slow it down to the extent possible. And so there's a lot of coordination going on between the counties and then within our county with the municipalities to come up with what we felt would best protect the citizens of the county. And so that was the main reason, is which we have such a high infection rate right now.
So Wasatch County Health Director Randall Probe said yesterday that He is not one who believes that we need orders to help people do the right thing. He said, I think the education is good, but I don't see that the average person really thinking this is as serious as it may be. So he says he wouldn't issue the order. It was the Wasatch County Council that actually issued the order?
No, the health director did. I think maybe that was what he said was a little bit misunderstood. His hope was certainly that everyone would do the right thing. What we were finding, though, is we were not getting social distancing. We were not getting good practices within business, and the spread of the virus was increasing dramatically within our citizens of the county. So a better way to try and prevent that from escalating was to implement the order. It certainly was a hard decision on everybody's part.
Sure. And you mentioned you did get some input, or at least some information from other agencies. I mean, what sort of input did you receive ahead of making that stay-at-home order?
Well, we wanted to talk to the municipalities, of course, working with them, and then reaching out also to the business community, recognizing that they would take a significant hit with their employees and businesses not operating at the full levels. And we got very good support from the local businesses, wanting to get through this as quickly as possible, recognizing that if we can bring things down early on, that could help us get back to normal later on. And so I think there was a lot of cooperation there. Of course, there are some that don't agree, and I understand that. But mostly we've received positive feedback.
So the order, I believe, runs through, is it April 12th or?
It's a two-week order, as I recall. I don't remember the date exactly, but it's basically a two-week order.
That would be Easter Sunday then. So what would need to happen or not happen, I guess, for the council to extend that order? I mean, as you know, Summit County's order goes basically through April.
Yes. The council would then meet with the health director, and they would, through a council meeting, then extend that health order for an additional period of time if they deem that appropriate.
Yeah, and again, just looking at whether or not the cases are increasing or whether they flattened. And
That's correct, and it's not just extending the order. If that were to happen, it may be modifying the order to a different status. And if things were getting better, maybe there would still be an order that would have less restrictions. If it's escalating at a higher rate, perhaps it could be more restrictions. So I think it was a look-and-see type situation. Let's go a couple weeks. And that's one of the biggest challenges we have, is we're essentially 2 weeks behind on everything. And we don't know where we really are for 2 weeks because of the incubation period of the virus.
Sure. So what community input is the county getting now that the order is in place?
So we've got a couple of things. For the order itself, we have a call center set up with health department personnel manning that. So anybody can call in there and ask questions about the order specifically. And I can give you that number. It's 435-657-3276. And we do have people there to help. And as far as business, we're working through our economic development director, John Kocher, and he is through the Heber Valley Chamber and Tourism Department of Economic Development. He is helping businesses to direct them to the potential available monies through the SBA and the state. And so we're trying all these different aspects to try and reach out to people. In addition, our council has been very, very proactive on this, and we've been holding at the first daily meetings at 5 o'clock to give updates. Our website is, we focus everybody to our website. We've got all the information there. You can access through wasatch.utah.gov, and the specific website is coronavirus.wasatch.utah.gov. And on that, we have links to the state and the WHO, all the CDC, all the different websites that have the factual information on the virus, as well as the accounting of numbers and so forth. And also listed there are our health orders, and all of them are listed. We've had a couple of health orders. We started out just restricting some of the restaurants, and then, of course, we went to the stay-at-home order. But the latest information from the county is there. Our municipalities have been working with us, the mayors and so forth. And so we think through our website we have the most succinct information applicable to Wasatch County.
Yeah. Are you getting any pushback from residents? Or you have people telling you?
We've had a couple that are not happy about it. They feel that it is exceeding their rights. But honestly, the vast majority of people are supportive of this. And I think that, you know, we went through with the high school students right at the very beginning. We had a high school student that got the virus. And that's a difficult population to understand and be able to work with. They basically had a stay-at-home order right from the very beginning for them. And we were so pleased with how well they worked at it. And, of course, it wasn't perfect, but it was good enough that we only have one other individual right now that has the virus in that age group. So we're kind of excited that worked that well. And so we hope that the rest of the age groups are the most active age group is the 25 to 40-something age group, and that's the highest infected group as well. And so we've got to get people to stay at home as best they can and keep their distance, and we can calm this down.
Yeah. And I'm guessing the order includes an appeals process. So if somebody does have an issue, that's where they take it up with?
Absolutely. And that would go through the health director, Randall Probst, and then working in conjunction with the county and the sheriff's office, we would handle those types of issues and make sure that everybody is, their concerns are addressed.
At what point does the sheriff's office start issuing citations for people who don't follow the order, or do you think you'll ever get to that point?
We don't think we will, and we've had a lot of discussion about that. That's a very extreme type of position, we feel. And certainly there may be recommendations if they were to run into a large group of people, they may suggest to them that they really ought to split up, but we're not going to be issuing citations at this point.
Okay. Let's see. The council also passed a resolution allowing them to hold electronic meetings. Is that a temporary measure, or what does that look like in the future?
Right now, it is just an ordinance that allows it, so it can be repealed or it can be modified. It does not have a sunset date on it at this time. It's in conjunction with the order that Governor Herbert put out. Previously, we had to have a presence at a meeting to be able to have remote connections, and this allows for all the participants to be remote connections. That was our first meeting. We've got a little bit of work to do on that, but we want to be able to have the public be able to give us input during those meetings so that when we get to regular type of business, we can have public input, whether it's land use or whatever it is. And so we've got some refining to do with that, but it seemed to work. We just need to do a little better.
All right. Will the council continue to hold its special daily meetings?
That's on a day-by-day basis, and they decide at 3 o'clock. And essentially, we've asked the health director to notify us by 3 o'clock if we're going to hold an emergency notification meeting. These are only notification meetings that we're doing on the quasi-daily basis. And so if there's something of an emergency nature, we will hold the meeting. If there's not, we won't. And we'll notify it at 3 o'clock for the 5 o'clock meeting. Our regular council meetings, which are held on the first three Wednesdays of the month, we did adjust next Wednesday's meeting to a regular meeting. It's normally a discussion meeting. And so there will likely be some regular county work performed at that meeting. And so hopefully we can get the public input we need and the participation.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about how county operations are being affected by the order? I mean, do you have staff working at home?
Yes. The first office that we did modify was the DMV office. We have a very high volume DMV office. Right now, if you were to come into the county building, we have all the forms necessary for renewals and title work and so forth available. They need to be filled out, and then there's a drop box, so there's no face-to-face contact in the DMV office, but we do process those. We are encouraging people to use the online registration that the state has. But we can still handle those things. It's just going to be a little slower process there. All other offices in the county building, the doors are shut, but we do have phone numbers. The building itself is open. You can call that number. We can work out what needs to be done. We can still issue marriage licenses, take payments for taxes, do those types of things. We just are doing it to try and calm it down. We try to do as much online, non-face-to-face, and then if possible, we can schedule an appointment, which will utilize the distancing practices to try and solve everybody's problems. So we are open for business. It's a little bit more awkward for people, but we have slowed down quite a bit in business as well. We don't have too much activity right now.
Okay. And construction, of course, was set to start on the portals under US 40 this week. Is that underway, or do we know? Or
My understanding is that it will be. That's a UDOT project. And last I heard, they will be starting this week. We also have the Jordanelle Parkway, which is runs parallel to that for a ways, that will be starting back up in the next week or two. So both of those construction projects will be going on. A lot of the other construction up in the Jordanelle area has been put on hold, and I don't know when that's going to come back. We do have other, of course, commercial and residential construction still going on, and that is still allowed by our order with safe distancing practices.
Okay. Mike, anything else you'd like to add?
No, we really appreciate the opportunity to get this message out there. Again, please do get a hold of us. Our website has all the contact numbers and so forth, and we do want to address concerns that are in the community, and we hope that everybody stays safe.
Okay. Mike Davis, Wasatch County Manager, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:29. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:29. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council figuring out how to conduct business while staying at home. On the phone with an update of yesterday's meeting, I have Summit County Council member Kim Carson. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie.
Now, as a county council member and also a member of the Board of Health, do you have a sense if our population is following the directives for the staying at home order?
We believe overall people are following the stay-at-home order, and we really appreciate the cooperation of everyone in the community.
Yeah, and like I was asking Mike Davis from Wasatch County whether or not the Sheriff's Department would need to be involved. Have we seen the Sheriff's Office out there enforcing this or at least educating people on it?
They have been doing primarily education. We've been working hard to, you know, identify. Actually, the public has been letting us know through calls into our hotline number. They've been letting us know if there's, you know, when people have concerns they've witnessed in the community. So it's mainly been complaint driven when we've done that education piece.
Okay. Yesterday, the council heard from Economic Development Director Jeff Jones. His estimate of job losses ranging from 7 to 8,000 up to 10 to 11,000 people. I mean, that's a pretty big spread, 4,000?
Well, it is, and it's just so early to tell. So it's hard to make hard estimates when we just don't know the impact. If we can start loosening things up by, you know, the end of May, then those numbers will be towards the lower end. But if we, you know, we just don't know how this virus is going to react. I'm really hopeful that the stay-at-home order and people really abiding by that will make a difference.
Yeah. And Chief Finance Officer Matt Levitt suggesting the optimistic scenario is we're locked down for a couple of months, maybe a lousy summer, and then getting back to normal by next winter. He estimates a loss of about $1.7 million in revenues to the county. Is that just money lost forever, or can that be made up?
That's really lost revenue, or at least a delay in receiving revenue. What we have to go on is looking at historical data. So we looked closely at, or I should say Matt did and shared it with us, back to the 07-08 recession and what happened then. We feel like because of how quickly this, that our some of our revenue sources were cut short so abruptly, that it may have a bigger impact from due to that. However, you know, most recessions, you really don't know you're in it for 6 months. And this gives us the advantage of at least we know we're here and we can start taking immediate action to try to mitigate. We can't really mitigate the losses, but we can do things within our budget to work with it.
And what's Matt's projection for the worst case scenario?
He was looking at over 11 million jobs. Well, that was Jeff's estimate of how many jobs. And with those jobs, there's a direct correlation in sales loss, sales and use tax revenue. So, you know, worst case, we're probably looking at for this year close to a $2 million loss in revenue. But again, there's so many pieces at play here. I think the important part of our presentation last night was to get a general overview of, you know, getting some historical data, seeing how this could possibly affect us, and have us start thinking about what we need to do to mitigate. And we didn't have many specifics last night, but moving forward, we're going to start having discussions on how we can reduce our expenditures. And number one is the allocation of personnel. We're trying to, in some departments, they may not be as busy now, so we're reallocating them and putting them to work directly on the COVID-19 team. We're going to start looking at the use of those hospitality tax revenues, the TRT, the RAP, the restaurant. With the fund balances we currently have, what flexibility can we possibly get from the governor and the legislature, and how could we possibly use those funds? Not only those we're really looking at to look at things we can do within the community to get businesses back up and running when the time comes. And then an intentional use of our fund balances. We've worked hard to build those back up, and we're about at the place where, you know, we've accomplished our goals in that area. However, we want to use those very judiciously because we don't know the long-term impacts of the virus.
Yeah. I want to mention, because you brought up a lot of stuff, though, that tax stability fund, don't you need some kind of public vote in order to dip into that? Or are you talking about just fund balances that you would dip into?
I'm talking about fund balances, not the tax stability fund. And that may be something we'll look out at down the road. And we'll definitely be having, I think you can expect something in this area to be on our agenda every single week going forward.
Yeah, and you, the council did ask Governor Herbert to grant permission to use those TRT, RAP, and restaurant taxes for other purposes. Have you heard back?
Well, we believe it's going to be on the agenda for a future special session of the legislature. And I'm going to be participating today in a meeting with Utah Association of Counties where we're discussing what this might look like.
All right.
And it's just a preliminary discussion. We want to get the involvement of those that would be, you know, possibly impacted, like the Chamber Bureau, like our local nonprofits and businesses that utilize the grants that come from these sources.
Okay, because I was just going to ask for your response to those nonprofits that have already expressed concern about perhaps losing some of the money they're currently receiving.
Right. You know, I personally put the nonprofits in the same category as our small businesses. we definitely have to protect the resources that would go to them. It's also important to note that, you know, if we want our economy to come back and thrive, we have to make sure our nonprofits thrive also, because they're the ones that are so involved in providing the programs, the events that attract people to the community and support those activities for the local population. So, you know, they're a critical piece of this.
Yeah. And then you had mentioned that in terms of staff, you're kind of reallocating staff. Are we talking about any kind of hiring freezes, salary adjustments, reducing merit pay or cost of living adjustments?
I would say right now, nothing is off the table, and we really have to look at every source and every possible scenario. We highly value our employees, and we're going to do everything we can to protect them moving forward. But I think, you know, a hiring freeze, for instance, unless it's in a critical position, we need to consider that immediately.
All right. County Manager Tom Fisher suggested that the council make changes to this year's budget at least before Memorial Day so that we can kind of have a more controlled budget process this fall and be prepared to react if the virus gets a second wave. So do you agree with that?
I do. Okay. Yeah, I think the sooner the better. And, you know, it may be that this occurs in stages. In fact, I'm certain it will be as we learn more about what the impacts actually are. But there's things, you know, we know we're going to have a serious decline in revenue. So we need to start putting things in place now to react to that.
Okay. And you think you can put things into place to avoid any kind of tax increase?
I certainly hope so, because I know our citizens have been heavily impacted by this.
Yeah.
I think we need to look at cuts within our organization before we ever consider tax increases.
Okay. A major question, of course, what the virus will do. As one council member, Glenn Wright, pointed out, the 1918 flu came in waves, the second wave worse than the first. Are we just kind of watching and waiting?
You know, we are. This is a brand new virus. Nobody knows exactly how it's going to react. Every day we get new information on, and, you know, one thing that will help us considerably is getting more testing, making sure those people that have been tested, that we do the tracing to find out who they've had contact with, so we can really work on making sure those contacts are isolated and not spreading the disease. But we're also going to have to look closely at the areas that were hit prior to us to see how it's behaving there. What actions did they take that were different from what we're doing? Were they late to have stay-at-home orders, or was it early?
Yeah. Councilmember Doug Clyde mentioned a silver lining. For example, he said that the resort industry bounces back more from economic downturns. Do you have any silver lining in all of this, Kim?
I think the silver lining for me is to see how our community has come together. Nobody could have predicted what we're experiencing right now. And to see the way our staff has responded has just been amazing. I have the utmost respect for them. And to see how the community has been so dedicated to doing what they can to help slow the spread of this.
Okay. Let's see. Elsewhere on the agenda, your sustainability staff gave an update on the county's greenhouse gas emissions. Two major sources mentioned were the landfill and the county's transportation system. So what do we do to reduce those?
Well, so for the countywide, we had about a 4% annual increase. So, you know, we don't want to see increases year over year. And if we would have had 100% renewable energy in place, we would have actually seen a reduction of about 27% over the five-year period, and it ended up being about a 21% increase. So I'm really pleased with the work we've done through HB 411, and that's just going, hopefully by 2023, we can start that transitioning to the 100% renewable, and that'll make a huge difference. Most of the growth in this has come from residential growth. So anything individuals can do to improve how efficient their home is, it's huge. So start looking at caulking around your windows and looking at insulation, and just pay attention to your own electricity use. Actually, it's electricity and your natural gas use, if that's how you heat your home. We're all spending a lot more time at home right now. So in some ways, we have a lot of cars off the road, which is going to be a real benefit. However, we're probably using a lot more electricity and natural gas, you know, in our day-to-day business. So be conscious of not turning the heat up higher than you need to. These little, not leaving lights on, these things can all make a huge difference. And then electricity business growth was one of the second highest. Some things we need to focus on within the county is the landfill. The 3-mile landfill is one of our highest contributors. So that's a tough one, but we need to look closely at that. And then our transit fleet, and then transportation as a whole within the county. How can we improve efficiency? And again, everybody reducing trips, those things do make a difference.
Okay, and then finally, is the council having the coffee with council tomorrow morning?
Yes, I wanted to make sure to mention that. The best way to get the information is to go to the Summit County Facebook page, and there you'll find the instructions for participating in tomorrow's coffee with council. It's from 8 to 9 a.m., and it's BYOC, so bring your own coffee. And that should be a good discussion, I hope. You know, it's a different format, so, but we look forward to having some of our residents participate. I also want to mention that we had a proclamation recognizing Kenny the Dream. He's from our public works department, and he worked for the county for almost 28 years as a snowplow driver. So we want to thank him for not only his plowing skills, but the humor that he brought to so many over the years.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate your time, Kim.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
That's Summit County Council member Kim Carson. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, COVID-19 has disrupted businesses, schools, nonprofits, and churches. Joining us now on the phone, I have the stake president of the Hebert North Stake of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Travis Wilcox. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks so much. So tell us first what a stake president in the LDS Church does.
Sure. You know, our local leadership in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is a lay leadership, meaning we don't receive any compensation for our time as a leader. A stake president is asked to serve typically for about 9 to 10 years. And as a stake president, I oversee 10 different local congregations called wards. And there are approximately 4,700 people in these 10 congregations. Each of those congregations is led by a bishop and other local leaders who are men and women. My primary responsibility is to try to be a spiritual leader for all of the individuals in these congregations, as well as manage all of the administrative responsibilities.
Okay.
And really, I guess what it boils down to is that I work with other stake and ward leaders to help build faith in Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about how the stake is handling this closure again, that we're not allowed to meet like we used to.
Yeah. So let me maybe mention three things. There's lots of things that we're doing, but I'll talk about three here. So first of all, we are citizens of our community, and we have a responsibility to respond to the to Governor Herbert's stay safe, stay home directive, and also the stay at home order that is effective in Wasatch County. And so we're asking that everyone in Wasatch County abide by this order. As such, we are no longer holding church meetings in person. People are doing their Sunday worship privately in their own homes. And we've been preparing for a more home-centered gospel learning experience for about a year and a half. So people are doing, you know, their gospel learning and gospel study in their homes. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we also understand that we need to care for one another. This is part of our doctrine as found in the Bible and the Book of Mormon, and we take this very seriously. Our caring for one another is called ministering, and this has also had to change as we're not seeing each other in person like we have may have done previously. So we're reaching out using other means, phone, text, social media, etc. That's had to take the forefront in reaching out and trying to just care for each other, make sure that people's needs are being met. And the third thing that I would mention is that there are lots of people that have lost jobs and are unable to provide the necessities of life at this time. And so we're working very closely with the Christian Center of Park City and the Utah Food Bank, who both have pantries, food pantries in Wasatch County. We're working to help provide commodities from our bishop's storehouse to these pantries. Our church is making sizable donations in this regard to help provide for all people in the community that may be in need.
Okay, so not just the members then. It's being distributed countywide.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. You know, for many people, not just Mormons, their weekly faith gathering is an important part of their lives. How is then that weekly message of faith being distributed?
Well, as mentioned, you know, we have a curriculum, a home-centered gospel study curriculum that we use that's been provided to us from the general church leadership. And so we spend time each week in studying that curriculum, and that's a big part of it. Obviously, you know, Bible study, Book of Mormon study, that sort of thing. But this is right now being done with just as families and individuals. Now, I will say from a church leadership perspective, we try to send out messages. I sent out a message to, you know, all of the people that I oversee this past Sunday, and just sent that out via email to everyone. And hopefully people are sharing that with each other and getting messages of faith and hope out there.
All right. And of course, the church's worldwide biannual conference scheduled for this weekend. Again, it's usually a huge gathering of people in Salt Lake City and, of course, worldwide. So what are you expecting to hear from leadership this weekend?
You know, General Conference is always just a wonderful time for me personally. It's a spiritual renewal. I love the messages that are always shared by our general church leadership. I'd expect to hear messages of hope and love and faith, you know, through Jesus Christ, messages of compassion and taking care of each other in these trying and difficult times, messages of hope to those that have lost loved ones during this time. And so those are the messages that I would expect to hear.
Yeah. And so this is all going to be done remotely?
Yes, it will be broadcast from Salt Lake City, as I understand, but there will be no one in attendance other than those that are directly participating in the meeting, meaning they're speaking in the meeting, but it will be broadcast from Salt Lake and all done remotely.
Okay. And of course, we've seen large number of youth missionaries returning from across the globe to their homes here in Utah. How are you advising those coming home to the Heber Valley?
Yeah, you know, maybe I'll share my own personal experience about this as it has hit close to home for me. My youngest son has been serving as a missionary in Lima, Peru for the last 21 months, and they were finally able to arrange travel through the U.S. Embassy on Tuesday of this week, and he arrived back in Salt Lake City yesterday. And so my wife and I drove down to the airport to pick him up, and this is what we would instruct all people to do, but we followed the instructions of airport officials and parked where directed, and we waited in our car for him to come out of the airport after he'd collected his baggage. And then, you know, he found us at our car, and we loaded his bags in the car and drove home. And as you can imagine, it's been a tender and sweet reunion for us after a 21-month absence. But even though he's healthy and has no symptoms, he'll be in a 14-day self-isolation period in our home as we try to do our part not to spread the virus to others. And so this is what we're instructing all missionaries, and we've had many in the Heber Valley that have returned home, to do, is that they come home and they spend 14 days in their home, isolated and just making sure that they don't have the virus.
Okay, Travis, anything else that you'd like to say to our listeners?
I just appreciate the opportunity to come on. I would just say, you know, I know that this pandemic's caused significant hardships on people right here in our community, and my heart and prayers go out to everyone who's lost economic security, and especially those who may have lost loved ones.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Travis Wilcox, again, is the president of the Heber North Stake of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:55.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design. Love your home.
Well, Intermountain Healthcare has launched 20 COVID-19 curbside testing sites in the state. One is in Park City and one is in the Heber Valley, which are the two biggest virus hotspots in the state. They've tested more than 10,000 people since the middle of March. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has information on access and availability of the tests and how prepared IHC is to handle the community spread of COVID-19.
IHC Urgent Care Medical Director Anthony Wallen, MD, says the testing will help the state epidemiologist identify hotspots, which, he says, is critical to flattening the curve on the numbers of people who get the virus.
Yeah, I can answer that. So there's two hotspots, maybe three. The first is Summit County. That was probably the first hotspot and still is. The Wasatch County as well, where the Heber area, is another hotspot. And then Salt Lake County is at least a place of focus at this point.
Intermountain Medical Group's Vice President of Operations, Rebecca Cooper-Knowles, says the family's first Coronavirus Response Act, signed into law on March 18th, will cover all costs related to testing.
Everybody is covered for coronavirus COVID-19 testing and all of the related exam costs as well. So regardless of your insurance status, any co-pays or in-network requirements have been waived, and we are able to offer testing for COVID-19 for all patients and community members who need it, regardless of their ability to pay, regardless of their insurance status.
Wallen says they prefer that patients call the COVID hotline at 844-442-5224 before going to the test site. However, it's not required.
We have nurses, many nurses, answering those calls, and they screen you based on your symptoms and quite a few other questions and determine whether testing should occur. If they decide that testing should occur, then they can send an order in to our testing sites so that you can be ready for that test when you pull up.
If symptoms are mild, Cooper-Knowles suggests using the symptom checker on the intermountainhealthcare.org website.
For those who are having more moderate symptoms and they're concerned, they can use a symptom checker if they'd like, or they can just go right ahead to drive through one of our testing sites where they can be assessed with the screening questions and also tested if that's indicated. Our testing is performed by nurses and medical professionals who are skilled and ready to take care of anybody who presents.
Swabbing is the technique they use to collect the nasal specimen. You can see a demonstration on kpcw.org. 10% of those who test positive will end up in the hospital. Wallen says they expect to see increased rates of the illness as they test more people.
I can tell you that we might see an increased incidence of positive tests as we test more, but that shouldn't deter us from testing. We need to go ahead and keep testing so that we can really get a better understanding of how many patients have this in our communities. So I wouldn't expect that hospital rate to go down presently, but our goal will be to get that down, and that's part of that social distancing.
Cooper Knowles says they take careful accounting of personal protective equipment daily, using projections based on models showing increases in community spread.
And Intermount is committed to getting our caregivers and the right PPE at the right time. There have been different recommendations coming out from all kinds of professional organizations, as well as for the Center for Disease Control and the World Health Organization. And we take all of those recommendations into consideration when we provide PPE for our caregivers.
Dr. Wallen says IHC would consider helping other areas in dire need of PPE, providing supplies are adequate for Utah's projected needs. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
The Summit County Attorney's Office has charged a 24-year-old van driver for striking and fatally injuring a pedestrian in Old Town last winter. The documents were filed Tuesday against Salt Lake resident Nicholas Thorsten Westland. The criminal information said that on February 6th at about 7:15 p.m., a Park City police officer responded to a report of an injury accident at 1482 Empire Avenue. The officer observed a bloody scene south of the bus stop where several individuals were tending to the unconscious victim on the ground, later identified as California resident Thomas Chaval. He was later transported to a hospital where he died of his injuries. The Park City officer saw car parts on the roadway, but no skid marks. A witness said that he had been able to photograph the license plate of a van leaving the scene. It was identified as belonging to Black Tie Ski Rental. After the company was contacted, Westland returned to the scene in the van that showed damage to the front passenger side. Westland reportedly made several statements admitting that he had struck a pedestrian and drove away from the scene. Once again, we've got 21 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, looking for chance of some snow showers. Otherwise, we should see some sunshine later this afternoon. Expected high up to about 31. Clear tonight, 15 is the overnight low. Sunny and 40 tomorrow. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned. We've got headline news from National Public Radio, followed by Cool Science Radio. It's 9 o'clock.